Blog Talk
okay.
Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week, each Friday, I am truly honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. Now, these are people who are business leaders in multiple industries, and they're here to share their wonderful stories and their tips and their action advice. They're going to show us how to basically shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And in fact, my guests are so compelling and insightful that this podcast was written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to, and has also been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. And our topic today, using and developing decisive intuition in business, with my guest, Rick Snyder. Now, Rick Snyder is the founder and CEO of 3Hats. That's 3-hats.com, an international consulting firm that builds high-performance environments in small, mid-size, and corporate businesses. He leads the 3Hats coaches in training companies and learns and teams to build intuitive skills and translate them into business plans and company cultures. And these result in more effective communication, engagement, profitability, and innovative success. His breakthrough strategies have been, You ever have one of those days you can't talk, you can't read? I'm having that day. Rick, you're going to be doing all the talking, I'm telling you right now. So just so you know, his breakthrough strategies have been implemented by executives and businesses in Europe, Canada, Asia, Africa, and America. He also holds an MA in psychology and has previously worked in the healthcare, tourism, travel, and training spaces. He launched three businesses of his own and travels extensively between California and Europe for work and leisure, and he helps people access their intuitive skills for decision-making on a very global scale. Rick, good morning. Pardon my little pauses here. It's going to be one of those mornings. And welcome to your Partner in Success Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Denise. Looking forward to our conversation today.
I suspect it's rather going to be you taking over my show. There's not going to be much conversation the shape I'm in. But we'll see where it goes. So listen, the last time we spoke, when we did our pre-call, you were in California, and I think you are today, but you typically reside in Paris, I think.
Actually, I'm in France right now. I'm in the south part of France, close to Nice. And so I'm actually calling you from France today.
What time is it there? I have to know.
Yeah, right now it's 5 p.m. in the afternoon.
Oh, okay. So I didn't make you stay up until midnight, which has happened with guests from Australia and Spain and, you know,
right,
other places.
Exactly.
I'm always, what time is, I always feel terrible. 2 a.m, you know, there they are. Sorry, somebody's trying to call me and they shouldn't be doing that. Okay, is there anything that I missed in your intro that you really want people to know about you?
It really summarizes a lot of what I've been doing recently in developing. Basically, my passion is how do you develop intuitive intelligence in leadership, in management, and in teams, in companies around the world. And I'm just finding that this is a conversation that is getting more and more intriguing to business leaders out there as they're realizing there's a whole other wave of intelligence that they can access. And that there's actually more literature, there's more neurobiology, there's more education on how we can access our subconscious minds for better decision making. And so I'm one of those people trying to lead the wave in including more of who we are in that conversation around decision making.
And you and I had a pretty fascinating conversation about that earlier, because I think we all have intuition, whether we recognize it or not. We all have it at some level. I mean, we've all had those stories about, oh, you know, I don't want to get on that plane, or I better not step off this curb, and then all of a sudden a car comes swishing past you. We all can access it, but I think a lot of us are now just really kind of understanding that we can be deliberate about it, and that's what I would love to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of times, and we might have even spoken about this in our earlier call, that even if you just think about in the business space, in business school, we're actually dissuaded from listening and tuning into our intuition. And people are often conditioned out of that in our education systems and our trainings. And instead, we're over-relying, I think, too much on metrics, data, and things that seem more predictable and give us a sense of comfort and a sense of, we could say, order to the chaos of life. That if it fits into my table or my spreadsheets, then we should be good to go. But as all business leaders will tell you, that life doesn't fit so nice and neat in a data sheet all the time. And in fact, most times it doesn't. And so that's where I'm really coming from is, I'm not saying we should get rid of metrics or big data. Of course, that's here for a reason, and it's going to only increase as we get more complex with that. But my whole point is, because that's become such a focus recently around big data, now is the time to double up on our human intuition more than ever, so that we can learn how to actually guide that data, interpret that data, and use it more skillfully.
And see, that makes sense to me. I mean, I come across people all the time. I'll say, well, how did you, you know, where did you come up with this idea? What led you down that road? And honestly, Rick, they'll say, oh, it just popped into my head. But here's what they did. They acted on it. And
yes.
I think that's where a big part of, you know, acting on your intuition, not the voices in your head, that's something else, but acting on your intuition and saying, that sounds like a good idea, I better execute. So what do you find people are doing?
Well, I like what you said there, because for me, there's three places in the journey around building your relationship with your intuition where people get stuck. And so you named to me the third one. Here's what they are. And so for me, the first one is, do I even know how to tune into my intuition? And what that means to me is, how do I start to recognize when I'm getting intuitive data, and how does my intuition speak to me? And what's interesting is, it's unique for everybody. So for example, Denise, you might get intuition, and I'm just going to make this up. Maybe you hear sounds, you get audio, kind of chirping in your ear, for example, like, hey, don't walk into the street right now, or hey, you should really turn in this direction in your business. Maybe some people get more of a sensation or feeling in their body, like they get a gut feeling when they're about to interview somebody, if that person's really a fit for their company. And other people, actually, I have one person I interviewed for my book, he gets intuition through his dreams. So this guy's a chocolate maker, and he actually gets complex equipment that he sees in his dreams, and he actually wakes up and draws the schematics first thing in the morning when he's waking up based on this intuitive hit that he got in his dreams. And so my point is, we have to learn what is the language of our intuition. So that's the first step, is how do I listen to my intuition? And that's often where we get stuck. Number two is, can I trust my intuition? So just because I'm hearing a signal, or I'm getting a sense of something, can I actually trust it? Do I have that kind of reputation with myself that I've built, where I can really start to trust that, hey, this is something of significance that I'm downloading right now? There is an important message that I'm getting. Am I actually listening to it, and can I trust it from all the other noise that might be going on in my head and all the doubts, all the second guessing I might be experiencing for any big business decision, for example? And then the third one, as you said, is, okay, maybe I can listen to my intuition, number one. Maybe I can actually trust it, and I've built that reputation with myself, number two. And then number three, am I actually acting on it? And so just because I trust my intuition, I trust my gut sense, it doesn't mean that I necessarily act on it. So I might get a sense that someone is not a good hire for my business. I might really trust that feeling, but I still go ahead and hire them anyway, because maybe people around me are convincing me otherwise, or they have the flawless resume, and so I just decide, you know what, they went to Harvard. Okay, maybe I should hire them, even though everything in my body is telling me bad idea. And so these are typically the three places that I've been tracking where people get stuck in really, I would say, living from their intuitive intelligence.
And I love that you describe that. I actually have two ways of kind of honing in on what my intuition is telling me. One is that I've learned to kind of define, you know, we all talk with ourselves, right, Rick? So, you know, Denise, why did you do that? Oh, come on now. We all do it. And we do it out loud. I can do that. I live alone. My office is in my home. I can get by with talking to the cupboards. But here's the thing. I have learned that if I am having a chat with myself and if I say, oh, I'm going to do this or I should do this, that's my ego. But if I hear in my internal speaking, we can do this, we should do this, that's something entirely different, and that's the one I pay attention to. And also, another way I know that something is absolutely right, I'll literally hear a clicking on the left side of my head right over my ear. It's the weirdest thing. It's like, ooh, there's that click. It's an audible click. It's almost a physical, you know, like you get a crick in your neck type of thing. You have to kind of shake your head to shake it loose. But when I hear that click, I know largely that I'm done. You know, I'm not going to go back and play with you or do whatever that was again. I'm done. Does that make sense?
You know, what you're saying is so, yeah, completely. Like what you're saying is so fascinating because we're all so unique. And this is what's so interesting about this is there's not like a one size fits all around how your intuition speaks to you, which means that means we have to get curious about, well, how do I find out my version of that? And so like what you said about that click, that's a perfect example where that's going to be unique to you. I'm sure maybe some listeners out there might have that also. I know a woman, for example, who is incredibly intuitive. In fact, she does that for a living. And she gets this whole sensation up and down her left arm whenever there's a strong intuitive sensation about or about a certain direction in her life or a choice that she has to make. Whenever it's really lined up for her, she gets this really intense sensation down her whole left arm, and she's always kind of rubbing her left arm. And she'll even just say candidly, oh, I felt that right here. And it's just her antenna. That's how her antenna speaks to her. And so I think that's really the key is how does your intuitive antenna speak to you? And so if the listener can even just start imagining that and thinking back to, hey, when I have gotten that gut sense or I've gotten that hit about something, how did that message arrive to me? How did that come to me? And that's going to start giving you clues of some of the ways that your intuition speaks to you.
Now, some people I find they're aware of their intuition from a very, very early age, and they may kind of lose sight of it as school kind of beats it out of us and, you know, life can get in the way. But I think eventually most of us either are aware of it or we circle back around to it. But how, if you really have not used it in the longest kind of time, how do you develop it back again? Because we all have it. I'm convinced we all have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. And so, yeah, I think it starts with, first of all, it starts with a mindset shift. It starts with a perspective shift. And I think the idea is, number one, how can I actually be receptive to the fact that maybe I also am intuitive? Maybe I do have some of that intelligence. Even if, as you say, maybe school or my culture conditioned it out of me. And I was taught that there's no such thing as intuition. It's all, you know, new age hocus pocus or it's this or that, that it's something that we don't have access to. I think the key is, first of all, how do I shift that perspective? Because as you're saying, or as we're saying, some people don't even know it's on the menu. So how do you first realize, hey, maybe it is on the menu. Maybe it is something that I can access. And I think that's really the first step. Is I have to be receptive and open and start listening for those signs and signals that maybe I'm getting all the time. And I think one other easy step that really comes right after that is tracking backwards. So if I track back to some big decisions that I've made in my life, or maybe big decisions that I didn't make in my life, and I really had that strong intuitive sense about something, and then what's great about hindsight is you can kind of see how that played out. Like, okay, how did that work out? When I listened to that, how did that play out in the business? Or when I didn't listen to that, how did that play out in the business or even in my life? And so then we can start to track back and look at, you know, what is that trying to tell me as far as when I get those signals, how does that show up for me? How can I be receptive to that, that maybe I can also access that too? And then I can start really practicing listening and slowing down. And I think that's really the next big step. In my book, I lead the reader through 6 steps of connecting with your intuition. But for me, the first step is receptivity. And then the next important step is I actually have to slow down. And this is one of the biggest things that you don't, this is going to be interesting to hear maybe, that you don't actually find your intuition finds you.
And it's always in the shower. Go figure. Not always, but often. What is that
hey,
all
I'm with
about?
You. I'm telling right.
You know what I finally
let's talk about that. Yeah, let's talk about
that. Well, you know what I
that.
Finally did? Yes, because everybody says, oh, you know, be in the shower or the tub. It's like, oh, geez, I had this brilliant idea. You know what I did? This is so smart. It's not my idea. I wish it were. But when I'm in the shower, I got tired of running naked across the house to get to my computer. It's just not a smart thing to do. Slip on tile floors, down you go. But what I did was I bought some bathtub crayons, and I take them into the shower with me, and I scribble all over the wall. And then I take my iPhone, I take a picture of these wonderful thoughts, scrub the wall, and I'm back to work.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And let's talk about why that happens. And this is coming more from neurobiology perspective, is that what happens is when we're in a relaxed state, or when we're in either a flow state or some kind of relaxed state where we're getting out of our conscious mind, we're actually interrupting our normal way of thinking. That's when we actually slow down our conscious mind, which is really what my step is all about, is slowing down your conscious thinking and your conscious mind so that your intuition can actually find you. Otherwise, you're blocking your intuitive signals with your conscious mind because it's kind of puttering around with, oh, I got to do the laundry, I got to feed the kids, I got to get to work, I got to da-da-da-da. And there's the 20 things on our mind. We don't have any room for intuition to find us. We don't have any space for that conversation to happen because we're blocking it. And so what happens is when we take a hot shower, for me, it also happens in the steam room for some reason. When I'm in the steam room, my whole body is relaxed and my mind slows down. And it's almost like my panorama vision opens up and I'm just more receptive and I'm more open to new thoughts and innovative ideas that I just wouldn't have thought of before. And so for me, that's exactly why the shower, sometimes for some people getting a massage, steam room, a jacuzzi, even going for like a nice walk along the beach or somewhere in nature really helps people slow down. In fact, this is a true story. Steve Jobs, one of the things he was known for was actually when he wanted to have a breakthrough idea, he would turn off the computer, he would get out of the office. At that time, he didn't have to turn off his iPhone because it wasn't invented yet. But he would walk around the block of his office barefoot out in the world and really walk slowly barefoot. So he was feeling his body and his contact with the ground in Palo Alto, California, and just slowly walk around and take in the environment, slow down. And literally, that's where a lot of his breakthrough ideas would come from. He was also a big meditator. And so a lot of times in meditation, that's also a really great place to slow your mind down so that your intuition can speak to you through your subconscious.
And, you know, I do something very similar to Steve Jobs. I didn't realize I was doing it, but, you know, I'm a web developer. I'm constantly in front of a bank of monitors. I do a lot of very technical work. It requires focus and concentration. I love doing it, but after a while you realize that you've typed the same piece of code 4 different times in 4 different ways and it's not moving you forward. So, and because I do, you know, my office is in my home and I have this wonderful backyard, multiple times a day I will get up, go outside, and I've got these 3 big pecan trees that they're almost like a shrine to me. I mean, they're giant mature pecan trees, and I will get out there, kick off my shoes, and just ground myself in the ground. And it doesn't matter if it's raining, muddy, you know, grass is vibrant green like it is right now. I will get underneath those pecan trees barefoot and just breathe Now, I can't walk around out there barefoot because there's cockle burrs and there's pecans and they'll hurt your feet. But once I find a spot that's fairly, you know, free of hidden debris, I just stand there and go, oh, geez. And that's, you're right. My brain slows down and I will actively ask my intuition, what's going on? What do I need to pay attention to? And you know what else I do, Rick? I can't meditate. I have never learned to slow my monkey brain down enough to meditate. It just, I fall over and drool, or I start making my Thanksgiving shopping list. Doesn't matter if it's in July. That's, it happens every time.
Right.
So I have what I call open refrigerator door syndrome. The minute you stick your head in that refrigerator, you're blank, right? So I will come out of there and go, oh, well, that's a cool idea. And back to my desk I go. Didn't get anything out
exactly.
of the fridge. But it was my little mini meditation.
That's great.
So,
I mean, that's great. I'm appreciating how you're finding creative ways, and you're intuiting ways that you're accessing your deeper intelligence, and you're finding these ways that work for you. And I think that's really what I want the audience to hear is how do you find those little ways throughout the day where you can slow down, even if it's for 5 minutes. It's amazing what will happen for 5 minutes, because usually we go back to back meetings, back-to-back accountabilities and tasks, we don't even allow 5 minute space in our day. And so even if you can do that, that's even a huge step in creating space for outside-the-box thinking to happen.
I've done it forever. I mean, I've always felt the need to, well, what I do know, and I noticed this many years ago, is that you can only focus on something, really focus on it, and be very effective at building a website or writing a blog or something. In my life, I'm only effective for about 20, 30 minutes. And after that, the words run together, I'm cross-eyed, I have to get up and move around. And I do. I'm like a yo-yo. I am up and down all day long, but it's part of it. I deliberately created that habit, but part of it is I've got to get out of the chair and move. But what I have, and I wanted to go back to something you said earlier about flow, because as a creative, flow is incredibly important to me. And I will have days, sometimes weeks, where I am in the flow. And then I'll hit a period where I couldn't put together, you know, a hangman game. I mean, my poor hangman looks like he has scoliosis. You don't want to play with me. It's bad. But you know, it's just, it's, how do you, is there a way using your intuition that you can kind of work your way back into flow? Because if you got, you know, some way for me to do that, I will love you forever.
Yeah. In fact, I might even say it the other way, that if you can make time to get into flow states, that's actually where your intuition will also find you. So the two main ways that I've seen this is number one, like if you slow down, like we're talking about, that's one way for intuition to find you, which, you know, we've just given many examples of ways of relaxing and what have you. But the other one is to, like for some people, like you said, might not be able to sit still in meditation for 5-10 minutes. And so that's just, they're not wired that way. They're more active. And so here's what's great for those types is to find a flow state that works for you. And so I know people that like to go swimming or go for a run, or sometimes even like skiing or some kind of activity like a rollerblading, where you're just kind of doing your activity and you're moving. You have some kind of movement going on, and you start to enter that state where you're not thinking in the same way. You start to – literally your brain states start to shift. This has actually been shown. And you start to enter a different kind of performance state. Which is often called a flow state. And a lot of top athletes, top performers know what this is like when they get into that kind of flow state on a basketball court where they're not even consciously thinking about what they're doing. They're just in it. They're doing it. Dancers know about this a lot of times, professional dancers, any kind of performer. In fact, there's a really good book called Stealing Fire out there. By Jamie Wheeler and Stephen Kotler, I think their names are. Incredible book about how to access flow states, and they have a whole project around that. But it's another great way for letting intuition find you, because once again, if you're more the active type, how can you get into some kind of activity that kind of turns off your conscious mind, because you don't even have to think about swimming, you're just kind of doing your laps. Or when you're running, you're just kind of in that groove that you find. And that's another really powerful way for people to access this intelligence.
You know, it just occurred to me, and I hadn't even thought of it like that, but I have a rebounder, you know, with those little mini trampolines, and I've had it
Oh,
for
yeah.
years. It's actually in my office, and it is my favorite thing to do outside of going outside under the pecan trees, but I will get on that, and I'll bounce around like a little kid for about 15 minutes, and I don't have a thought in the world. I deliberately clear my brain, and I'm getting a little bit of exercise. I'm reoxygenating my brain. I'm refocusing my eyes. You know, I do it deliberately because, you know, when you're building something, well, you can play merry hell with your eyes. I mean, you really can. So I'll get on there and bounce around, and one of my cats will join me. He's 17 pounds. That gets interesting. But when I come off of it, I'm laughing and I'm energized. And I noticed Tony Robbins does the same thing. If you've ever watched I'm Not Your Guru, you'll see him just before he's going to go on, you know, on stage. He has a little rebounder next to that pool that, you know, I think it's a cold pool that he just jumps down into. And before he goes on stage, he's on that rebounder.
You
It
know, you
really
just saw
does
brought up
help.
another, yeah. That's right. And you brought up another great way to access flow, and that's actually play. And so when we can remember and connect with our play and our sense of play, that's really another way where we are getting out of our normal conscious thinking and we're opening up into a bigger creative space. And play is so connected to creativity and innovation. In fact, a lot of the work that I'm doing now with companies and also what some people that I've seen out there is really looking at ways of interrupting a team's normal way of thinking about a problem. If you have a working with a certain team around an issue in their company, and literally getting them and disrupting how they think, disrupting their normal way of thinking, and either getting them to play, getting them. I've even seen people like do juggling practices or some kind of movement, or getting them out of the office, getting them into nature. This is where so many different things like that can really help inspire a whole new strategic thinking and creative thinking that just sitting in front of your computer and thinking harder just doesn't do. And so I even, you know, what's also getting popular out there is improv classes. And a lot of
Oh,
corporations
that
are now
makes sense.
they're actually bringing in improv training. So people
Huh.
like they'll hire like in Chicago, the famous Second City Comedy Club, they actually will be hired by corporations in the Chicago area to come in to teach their team how to do some improv exercises. And what they're actually doing on a deeper level is they're teaching them and reminding them how to play, reminding them how to be spontaneous, reminding them how to be responsive in the moment to what you can't prepare for, which you can imagine has all kinds of business applications when you're dealing with sales, customers, marketing. All kinds of issues in a company or a marketplace. And so bringing in improv classes and play and spontaneity is really changing the game for some of these kind of traditionally, you know, strategic companies that are realizing, wait a minute, if we want outside the box thinking, we need to have outside the box approaches.
And honestly, who wants to sit in a cubicle all day long with somebody looking at you go, "You're not working. I see you playing solitaire over there." That will kill intuition and creativity and, you know, your will to get out of bed quicker than anything.
Exactly. And I mean, I've been in that position before. I've been in a cubicle in the past, and there's just something about it that's a bit soul sucking. And so if you don't have ways of keeping yourself fresh and ways of interrupting that, then you will kind of fall into these default ways of being that probably don't keep you on that edge of creativity and innovation.
Oh, absolutely. One thing I wanted to ask you about too is your subconscious. One of the things that I do every night before I go to bed, you know, I'm very grateful for everything, so I always express my gratitude to whoever's listening. And then if I have a thorny problem, and there always is one, there's always something I couldn't quite figure out, or maybe it's a family issue, whatever it is. Just before I drop off to sleep, I will turn it over and I say it out loud. I'm not keeping this to myself. I say it out loud to the room at large and I will say, "Listen, this is the problem. This is the answer I'm seeking." And I will turn it over literally to my subconscious for review, and you know it never fails me. So I don't know if that's a combination of subconscious and intuitive or just asking. I don't know what it is, but it works.
Yeah, you know, that's a really great practice what you're doing, because this is also one of my steps in the book, is asking for guidance, which can be very vulnerable, right? Because in a lot of ways, the mind wants to think it has all the answers. And I think a lot of us have that kind of, And you mentioned the ego earlier in this conversation, and like the ego mind gets threatened by the idea that it doesn't have all the answers. And so, you know, from its point of view, it knows everything and it's always right. And I'm sure a lot of us can relate to that. I know my ego mind does that all the time. And, you know, life always humbles it at every chance it gets, it seems like. And so what you're doing there is you're asking for guidance from something beyond your ego mind. And that's what's great, where you're opening up to your subconscious, which to me, that's where our intuition speaks to us through, is the subconscious and the unconscious mind, that deeper reservoir of data that we all have access to somewhere, even if it's not conscious to us. You even asking the question, and then you're probably relaxing. You know how we're always a little bit more relaxed when we're going to sleep, and so our body is kind of winding down from the day, and so that's once again where intuition can find you. But what's great about what you're doing is you're getting even more specific, and you're saying, hey, I need some help in this one area, or I want attention in this one thing that happened today. Can you give me some guidance on, you know, how can I get through this challenge, or give me a sign or signal that would help me take a next step? And when you ask a question like that, and then you kind of drift off to sleep, a lot of times, as you're saying, it might speak to you in your dreams or first thing in the morning or something along those lines. How does that work for you? You tend to get it
3:18. I will wake up. Yep. And it doesn't matter if I went to sleep 10 minutes earlier. 3:18. I will wake up without question at 3:18 every single morning, and I'll write it down. Then I go back to bed if I can. Sometimes I can't go back to sleep. Sometimes I can't. I'm one of those people who doesn't get in bed and just drop into a restful sleep. I'm up and down multiple times during the night, and I cat nap. I sleep in 2 to 3 hour increments if I'm lucky. But I've always been this way, so it works for me. But 3:18, yeah, and I'll look up, you know, I'll look at my clock and go, good girl, write it down, and off I go.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's amazing how you are really dialed into your intuitive language in all these different ways. And so that's amazing that you have found, at 3:18, that's when I get the download. And so that's what I want everyone
to listen to.
What a great
way to put it.
That. And,
I never thought of it like that, but that's my download. I love it.
Exactly. And so you have to have your server and your computer open at that time, because that's when you get your download, to make sure your internet connection is strong. And so somehow when at 3:18 or 3:17, your system is getting ready for that download. And so that happens. And so I think that's amazing how tuned in you are to that. And that's what I want to bring up to the listener right now is, like, you know, what is your way? How do you get your download? That's another way to say it. Like, how do you get your download? What does your version of that look like? And the more you can start tuning into that, that's what's going to serve you in the most important decisions in your life, in your business, in your relationships. It really changes the game once you start including that intelligence that's already yours. It's yours. It's your intelligence.
You just have to access it, and you have to be willing to do so. One of the questions that I have is this. I mean, I can hear people in my head going, yeah, but, you know, going outside and, you know, trying to tap into your intuition, what if nothing happens? My response is, and I'm curious to see what yours is, you can't just kind of demand it, although every once in a while I am able to do that. But your intuition, I think if you're putting the question out there and saying, listen, I have a problem, or I have a question, or I really need some guidance or help, it's going to pop up. Honestly, this has been my experience, when you least expect it, but you have to be paying attention. What do you think?
Yeah, this is right here, I think, the very hardest part about developing a trusted relationship with your intuition is this piece right here, is how do I get really focused and intentional about what I want to ask about and the challenge that's in front of me. And I'm really intentional about and specific about what that is. I ask my question, but then the next part is, then how do I let go? How do I let go of getting an answer within 5 minutes? How do I let go of the answer that I'm expecting? How do I let go of how I think I'm going to get that answer? That's the hardest part, at least in my experience. It's really hard for me to let go because I have all these ideas of how intuition is supposed to speak to me and the timeline that I'm expecting it by. But the real thing that I've been tracking here for a while now and with other people I've been interviewing and talking to is sometimes you just never know, as you say, it could happen the most unexpected time when you just don't even know that that's when you're going to get that response. And so that's really, I think, the key, once again.
Yeah, you just have to be paying attention and say, oh, okay, dog, don't go anywhere. I'll finish washing you in a minute. I'll be right back.
Exactly. So one of the hardest things is how do I invest in this process, but I divest of the outcome? I actually try to let go of the outcome and the answer I might be expecting. And that's really when it's working. That's when it works for you, because your mind's not trying to hijack the process, and your mind is not trying to hijack the outcome of what you think, what it thinks the answer should be.
You know, we always hear about, you have to power through it. You have to power through it. Rick, I think that's the worst thing you can do sometimes.
I agree. And I think the American culture, I've been living in France for 3 years and, I do plan to come back, but, it's been interesting to be here for 3 years because you get a whole different perspective on how the French, for example, or the continent over here relates to powering through, where, you have 2-hour lunches over here and a lot of times they drink rosé with their lunch. And, there's a relaxedness to the French culture that you don't find so much in the American culture, which is so much about pushing through and achieving and, being busy looks good. Like, hey, I'm busier than you. That's a lot of times what we are consciously or unconsciously advertising is how busy we are and that we think it's a good thing. But powering through is exhausting and it has a cost to it. And people are stressed out and, more than ever, and they don't have time. So what we're offering here, like slowing down, here's another way to think about it. What if slowing down actually is an action step? What if you were to think about it like an action step? And that slowing down was actually a choice. It's an action step. And that's actually deciding to, change how the course of my day is going, interrupt my thinking, interrupt the river of the pattern that usually happens. That's when our intuition can speak to us. That's when an innovative or creative thought can enter our consciousness in a whole new way.
That happens when I cook. I mean, I will be in the middle of a problem that just seems insurmountable, and I'm getting crankier by the moment, and I mean cranky. So I will literally walk off, I will just say, I'm leaving, and I'll walk into my kitchen, and I love to cook. I'm a really good cook, and I don't have to think about it. I'm one of those people, I cook by the seat of my jeans. It comes out delicious every time. There really is no thought process, but it's intensely creative. And all of a sudden, when I'm making, let's say, a gumbo, which is a kind of a lengthy process, I'm in flow. I am right back in flow. And when I do hit my desk again, I'm right back where I need to be. And I'm no longer struggling. I'm no longer cursing at my monitor, saying bad words. I'm in flow. And it works. I mean, I don't go do it every day, but when I feel the need to cook, and I may cook at 4 a.m, you never know. But that gets me right where I need to be.
Yeah, that's exactly another great example of flow state. And so cooking could be an example of that, where your conscious mind is relaxing a bit. You're not thinking about everything. You're just kind of in your gumbo flow, and that works for you. And so that's amazing.
We have a new phrase, gumbo flow. I like that.
You're in your gumbo flow. And so once again, like imagine that, you ask your question before you even get into gumbo flow and, should I do this with my business or should I go over here and try that? And then you ask that question, but then you hold it lightly and you let it go. And then you just get into the gumbo flow, right? And then through that, maybe something, who knows, 20 minutes down the road, there's a whole new thought that pops in that never would have been there before.
And see, you just added a step, because I don't often go in there and go, okay, I'm going to go into gumbo flow, which is my brand new term. Thank you for that. But when I go in there, I'm grumbling. I'm irritated. I'm just like, ugh, you know, things are not going my way. Why can't I make this happen? And I know better. So eventually, you know, once the stove is on, my pots are cooking, I just calm down. It's just kind of natural. What I have not done, and I'm going to add this step, is say, okay, Denise, you're fixing to go do something you really love to do, you really enjoy doing, but here's the question you need to be pondering while you're making the roux or while you're chopping those onions, whatever it is. And you're right, let it go. So that just got added to my cooking system, and thank you for that.
You know, I love that. You're welcome. And I want to give a quick sports analogy for any sports people listening to this. This is a really good example also. So in basketball right now, there's something amazing happening. Even if you're not a sports fan, you might appreciate how the Golden State Warriors play basketball. They have found flow amongst their team. And even though they have a couple amazing stars on their team, like Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, you'll notice the ball doesn't, they don't clog up the ball. It doesn't stay with them. They don't become ball hogs where they try to mash and control their agenda and then upset the whole flow of the team. It's almost like one membrane playing against the other team who are a bunch of individuals trying to score. And so because of that, there's an excitement. There's a joy. There's a sense of play when they play basketball, and everyone can feel it. The coach feels it. The stadium feels it. People love these guys because they're a joy to watch how they play the game. Where you get other teams, and there might be one or two stars who are trying to take the ball and mash it and be the number one stat stuffer and use their ego to kind of drive through, which is great in one way, but there's a higher level of operating when you actually don't try to control the flow. And I think it's ego's nature and our human nature a lot of times to try to control flow. But that's the paradox here, is you can't actually control flow or you're not flowing anymore.
I know. Believe me, I know. And we talk to I've tried it. It doesn't work. And I still keep trying.
Me too.
What
me
is
too.
That all about? It's like,
right, me
and
too.
I'll be standing around going, yeah. Denise, really, you know better than this. Knock it off. I mean, it's like I put myself in the corner for a while. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, too, because we're talking about how you access your intuitive intelligence, what are the obstacles? I know you talk about the five obstacles to doing this. So have we shared those yet?
No, we haven't talked about those specifically. Actually, we have a little bit, actually, because you had mentioned the ego. And so the ego, once again, is really one of those key areas where if we're trying to control, and ego can be interpreted many different ways depending on your context. And so I'm going to keep it very simple here. To me, ego is more when our persona is trying to control the show, trying to control the narrative about who we are and how we want people to perceive us. And so ego for me is more our self-image versus who we really are. And so that's one of the, I call it the obstacles or enemies to intuition, is when our ego is running the show, we're not actually open, we're not receptive and open to what we don't know. Because once again, the ego wants to control the known world. And so that's one of the big obstacles to intuition, is when our ego is running the show, we're not open to new data, we're not open to other people's perspectives, we're not open to data that we might be getting in our environment that's trying to tell us something. Some of the subtleties that might be happening in a sales conversation that we're not wanting to see or listen to. It can look in so many different ways. Sometimes when people do presentations or pitches in business, they're actually not, their ego is so into telling everything they know about their product that they're actually not having a conversation with the audience. And they're actually not open to what the audience, they're not reading out what the audience is actually feeling or their body language or whatever might be going on. So that's one really big, I would say, one big obstacle that gets in the way is our ego mind that way. Another one I like to call, we've also been talking about today, is called the rational mind. It's that conscious mind. And so the idea is when my mind is always trying to run the show once again of what I think should happen or all the different logical, critical thinking that I do, which is great in one way. I'm not saying you shouldn't do critical thinking, that you shouldn't do logical thinking, but so often from our mind's perspective, there's either it's very digital and binary. Either we're logical, or intuition is like is that weird illogical new age kind of stuff that touchy-feely emotional stuff. And so a lot of times in business, we've overvalued the rational mind and we've undervalued the creative right brain part of our mind. And so once again, this is to me where intuition really lives, is more that right brain, emotional, creative place. And what's interesting in business is that's all changing now. I mean, emotional intelligence was a new term 25 years ago. But now almost every article in every major business magazine is talking about emotional intelligence and in company cultures and customer service. It's everywhere. And same
as
with
it
intuitive
should be.
Intelligence.
It really should
exactly,
be. I think it's
right.
So important. Look, I have met people who were very intelligent, high level of intelligence, could not hold a conversation that anybody wanted to be in. Because their emotional intelligence was just nil, and they're uncomfortable to be around.
Exactly, 100%. And once again, this is where intuition is the fabric of business. Because to me, relationship is the cornerstone of business. And knowing how to tune into relationship, whether it's sales or marketing or customer service or managing other people or leading a whole team. Or even relationship to my finances and to money and to numbers. And learning how to communicate the story that my spreadsheets are telling me about what's happening with the data. And so when you get relational, that's when a business thrives. And so businesses these days more and more are getting that, I think. And so once again, that's where if you're just operating only from logic, that's not the only game in town. That's not the only intelligence in town. And so that's really what I'm trying to talk about here in my book and in my perspective is if you're only operating from the rational mind, you're actually limiting yourself. Same is true if you're only coming from ego, you're actually limiting yourself. The next one is doubt. That doubt is probably one of the most crippling things that gets in the way of our intuitive intelligence. Because like we've talked about earlier, you might actually have a really strong bodily sense of what needs to happen, but you doubt yourself, or you let other people convince you that your decision is bad or wrong. And so we can always backpedal and doubt and start to second guess what we know on a deeper level should happen. And so I've seen tons of people that I work with, as a business coach, tons of business owners and managers who doubt themselves and they don't see that they're getting in their own way. So that's another big obstacle to intuition. A fourth one that we actually talked about also is busyness. And when we talked about the culture being very busy, so if I'm chronically busy doing it all day long, there's no space once again for me to tap into my intuition. I'm in go mode all the time. I'm not in a receptive space by definition. So if I'm always trying to be productive and hustling and crushing it like everyone's talking about these days and moving fast, literally, right? And I get there's a value to that in one way, and I appreciate the hard work, but there also needs to be an off switch or a pause button. And if we don't allow our own pause button or off switch, I think that's where people burn out and we don't have time. We don't make time for our intuition to find us. And then the fifth and the very last one I talk about is fear. That a lot of times very strong emotions, and fear being one of the strongest emotions that we face, when we're hijacked by fear, we're tight, we are shut down, and there's no way that we can be more open to the data that's around us because we're in a contracted space. And so when fear takes us over, and that's all we're thinking about is in a worst case scenario, and we're maybe paranoid about everyone around us or whoever we're talking to, and then there's no way that we can open up to and listen for that deeper intelligence because we're literally in a different part of our brain and a different part of our body.
And of course, what you're thinking about expands. We all have found this out throughout our lives. I mean, if you're thinking to yourself, oh man, I've got a headache, and it's just a little mild headache, you probably just need a glass of water, about 20 minutes later, you're migraine area. I mean, keep thinking it, it's going to happen, pretty much.
Exactly. So Yeah, if you keep dwelling on the fear, what often happens is it will compound on itself, as you say, and then it really just takes up all the space. And so there's literally, once again, no room for any other experience.
Exactly. Okay, so let's move on. We're back to intuition. You say there are three types of intuition. What are they, and how do you integrate those in your life and your business?
Yeah, so this is kind of another fun way to play with the whole concept of intuition, and I've been trying to find approachable ways for people and ways that are also speak to how we can access our intelligence. And so here's what I've come up with is the three aspects of intuition. And so one of them I call directional intuition. And this is really about yourself. This is about developing your inner direction. I call it the navigator. And so this is that inner mechanism that we all have, our inner compass for how we make decisions. And so part of that part of intuition is cultivating my ability to trust my inner compass so that when I'm feeling into, should I hire this person? Should we take the business in this direction over here? Should we hold off on this product launch maybe one more quarter because we're just not ready yet? And it's really tuning into my directional intuition on making these choices in my life and really learning how that works for me as a leader, as a manager, as an employee. So that's all about myself. It's cultivating that relationship with myself and directional intuition. The second one that I talk about is social intuition. And so social intuition is, it's not just about me and my choice mechanism, my inner compass. It's actually tuning into other. And so if I'm in a sales conversation, how do I tune into the other person on the other side of the table? Or if I'm managing a team or in a team meeting, how do I tune into the interpersonal dynamics that are going on? You know, are they falling asleep? Are they all looking at their iPhones? Are they actually with me in this conversation? And so all that is learning about body language, emotional intelligence, social dynamics, and all the things that go into what I call social intuition. And the more your company develops social intuition, that and directional intuition, that's what's going to get you ahead from the competition, especially in today's day and age. And then the third one that I talk about, I call informational intuition. And so informational intuition is not just about self and other, it's about the whole environment. It's being able to tap into all the data that's around us, and I call them the data extractor. And this is actually where a lot of left brain people do very well. And so people who are like data scientists, day traders, financial advisors, people who work with a lot with numbers or complex data sets, what you'll find is a lot of times these people start to recognize patterns and they develop pattern recognition and thin slicing their way to an answer or to what the story is telling them from all the data around them. And so they're able to extract the meaning of all this complex, you know, data and material. For example, in my book, I interviewed an amazing property manager in Brooklyn, New York, and he can literally tell you the billable square footage value of a commercial property. If you quote him any block in Brooklyn and he's not even looking at his computer and you say, okay, you know, 47th Street and Van Buren, what's the square billable footage of a commercial space there? And he'll tell you what it is. And then you might say, okay, now let's say a Starbucks moves next door. How does that change the value? And he'll tell you right away within 20 seconds. And so when you really get to know your craft, you really start to develop this informational intuition over time that really is not about people necessarily, but more about the data sets that you're working with all the time. And so these three ways of working with our intuition, and by the way, I'm designing programs as we speak right now to go into all three of these and bringing these to different corporations and teams so that they can actually get stronger and smarter in these three different ways.
This is amazing. I have to ask you, though, I easily access left brain and right brain. For the longest kind of time, I was right brain, didn't know any different. Then I got tired of it. It was messy. It was emotional. Didn't work for me. So I opened up that very clean part of my brain that I hadn't really visited very much and went, ooh, I like it over here. So fortunately for me, I can easily jump between the two. Is this something that people can learn? I mean, because I think it's important to have access to both. You know, I'm a creative, but I'm also a very logical, linear thinker.
Yes.
So
here's how I talk about it.
My question is, can we do it all? You know, can that be trained or can that be learned?
Yes, I'm gonna say yes. And there's a spectrum. So here's what I'll say is, just like any skill, let's take music. I might if I practice the violin every day, I'm gonna get better. I'm gonna improve my violin skills. Now I may never sit in some orchestra that's playing in Vienna, you know, in the highest level. I'm probably never gonna make that orchestra. But I'm going to get incrementally better as I practice. Same in intuition. Some people are naturally talented and naturally gifted in a specific way around their intuition. And I know some people that are incredible with their intuition. And I know other people that just haven't made the time or haven't practiced how to build that muscle. And so what I've seen in the people that I coach and work with, that when you start to practice this and you start to pay attention in a new way, you start to, you know, take these incremental steps of getting into relationship with your intuitive language, you actually start building that muscle and you actually get better at social intuition. You get better at directional intuition and making decisions. You get better at your informational intuition and learning the craft that's around you and how to take shortcuts to get to the answer. So I do think there is such a thing as talent, and not everyone's going to be in the NBA, for example. But if you keep practicing your basketball shots, you're going to get a little better over time. And if you keep practicing your intuition, you will see improvement over time.
I love that. So how do you – man, we've only got about 3 more minutes. I told you this was the quickest 60 minutes on the air. Okay. I didn't lie. So one of the things that I'd really like to know is, how do you use intuition in practical ways? I mean, if you're in business, a lot of us are, you know, some of us work for other people, but we're still in business in a way. What are some of the best ways that you can show up and be the best person you can be, and the people around you and your employer, or you, if you're the employer, what can you do? Can you give us some, you know, quick tips on that?
Yeah, so let's take a couple really specific examples. So let's just talk about sales, for example. I mean, we can go in any doorway in business, but let's just go in sales. So I think the best salespeople are using their intuition all the time. They just might not call it that. And so what I would say is, when you're talking about intuition, intuition forces you to be in the present moment. So if I'm with a prospect in a conversation, how do I start to slow down and not just trying to think about the close, and not just trying to memorize my script and run through my script of my sales, or try to think about the objections they might be levying at me, you know, like 10 minutes from now. But how can I drop all that for a moment and really be with them and bring my intuition, my social intuition, into, hey, what's happening for this person in front of me? How can I get their world a little bit more? And what's the question I need to ask them? What's an open-ended question I should ask them right now that's going to actually increase our relationality between each other, and it's going to help me deepen our sales connection? And I can really get at the heart of what they really need and want. And so if I can slow down, tune into my inner radar, and feel for what is the next question I need to ask them in the sales process, that's going to start to open up the space between us, and it's going to get them talking about themselves in ways that they wouldn't have done otherwise if I was just sticking with my agenda and having my ego run the show about, oh, here's what you need to know about my product, versus, wait a minute, how would you use my product? And what prompted you to get in touch with me in the first place? And really opening up the conversation and then letting your intuition guide you on what to ask next. And this will change the game for salespeople out there who might not be getting the results that they're wanting because they're sticking to a formula, which can be helpful to a degree, but sometimes you also have to color outside the lines and really trust what the information that you're getting in the moment.
Would that be – I hear this bandied about quite a bit, is active listening. Does that fall in that category?
100%. Yeah. So you're actually listening for what's going on in the moment. And then sometimes you're repeating back what you're noticing or hearing, like, hey, I just noticed you hesitated right now as we were talking about the price. I'm curious to hear, is there something going on for you about that? Or is there something that you want to say about the product that you didn't understand? And so you might ask a question when you might just say, hey, I noticed you hesitated right there. What's happening right now? And that's an amazing moment that most people will never name, that's actually bringing both people into the present moment even closer, because you're naming what's really going on in the moment with that person in front of you.
Perfect. And, you know, nobody wants to be sold to. We really don't. We don't want somebody, and poor used car salesman, I'm going to malign them again here, but I'll tell you what, I was in a situation, my former husband had already gone into the dealership. He had already chosen his car. It was a little Mercedes convertible. He just wanted me to go kind of sign off on it and say, you know, is this something you don't mind having in our garage? I didn't care. I didn't like it. I don't like sitting my butt on the ground going, vroom, vroom. I want to be up in an SUV. But he wanted this car. And when we walked in there, this salesman locked on me and did everything he could to convince me that we had to have this car. We were just there to sign. To this day, I don't know what he was thinking. It was the worst display of salesmanship I've ever seen. It was ridiculous.
Exactly. I've seen this time and time again where they'll lead with, hey, let me tell you about the fuel injection and the horsepower and this and that, when they didn't even first ask, hey, so tell me, what kind of driving experience are you looking for?
Exactly.
And that one,
and I mean, I drove it twice, hated it, never drove it again.
Exactly.
But he spent 30 minutes of my time. I mean, I actually finally just got up and walked out and I said, here, you know, write the check, let's go. I mean, I wanted to strangle the guy. So,
exactly. Yeah.
It was bad.
Right. Because what you said is important. We don't want to be sold to. We want to be related with.
Exactly.
And
you're right. You're slowing down and you're letting your intuition, what I'm hearing you say, is that when you're slowing down and you're engaging in active listening, no matter what the situation is, and you're actually kind of leaning in and listening, really, really listening, at that point, I have found, and I truly believe, that you both engage your intuition and you're on a level playing field.
100%. Last little quick thing I'll share is, imagine being a team meeting and that you're leading and the room feels flat and you actually have the courage to say, hey, right now our meeting is feeling flat to me right now. What's going on with everybody? And I guarantee by naming the disconnect intuitively, it puts you back in connection with what's really going on.
Exactly. Rick, this has been an amazing conversation, and I thank you so much for being with me here today. Where can people find you on the web, and where can they find your book?
Yeah, so you can find – thank you for asking. You can find me on the web at threehats.com, and that's three spelled out, hyphen hats, plural, .com. And we have all kinds of great programs for business, small business, medium size, and even corporations around – training with intuition, innovation, creativity, and that's going to be further and further developed as well. You can also find me at Rick A. Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R, on Twitter, on Instagram, social media, Facebook, etc. And then my book is actually not launching until early 2019, and I'm excited to get my book, Decisive Intuition, into your hands. I know.
I want it.
So it's going to come out. Well, I can't wait to give it to you, but the publisher is it's on their conveyor belt. And they have their own time frame of things. And so it's going to come out early 2019, and I can't wait to get this out there and really bring this conversation on a bigger level to the business world.
Well, let's do this. When the book is about to launch and it's about to be available, why don't you come back?
I would love to. Let's do
Excellent.
That. I would love to.
Yeah, definitely, because I've still got a whole mess of questions I didn't get a chance to ask you about. And once I've read the book, I'm sure I'll have more.
And then will you do gumbo flow tonight? And then if there's any more questions that come, write them down.
I will. Absolutely. Rick, thank you so much. It has been a genuine pleasure speaking with you today. And I really thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice and the great conversation that you shared with our audience. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Rick, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.